Well, Ron Gregory, welcome to the History of WoWo.com.
Well, thank you. It's nice to still be alive to talk about this stuff.
You did evenings on WoWo starting in 1973?
Yeah, I did. March of 73, I came out here from Washington, D.C. And when I first got to Fort Wayne, Westinghouse put me up at the old Keenan Hotel across the street from the radio station. And I had only heard WoWo at night because I grew up in Washington, so we only heard it after sundown. So I get out here, and I'm in the Keenan Hotel, and I turned it on the next morning. For the first time, I got to hear the morning show. And I heard some old guy who sounded like Walter Cronkite feeding chickens. And I thought, what in the world have I gotten into? This is nuts. I got to get out of here. I thought I was coming to a top 40 station.
Now, how did you originally get hired at WoWo? Dr. Roger Skulnick was the program director then, and did they just run an ad?
No, I had a machete. the truth, I sent a tape to KDKA in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard of somebody out there, a general manager named Marshall, and I sent him an air check. And the next thing I know, I get a call from Fort Wayne. And I knew that was somewhere near Ohio. I wasn't real sure where that was exactly. But I knew the station immediately. I mean, everybody knew WoWo. It was, in Washington, it was like a local station at night. So I decided to become a Westinghouse employee at the time. That was the premier group in the country.
Oh, yeah.
I really wanted to get involved with them. And I had other offers in D.C. and Baltimore at the time for more money. But I also thought, if I'm going to be heard in 28 states, this might be worth looking into.
Well, I was just going to ask you that. Tell me about what it was like being on, that 50,000-watt flamethrower in the evening.
Yeah, unbelievable. One night, and this will really bring it into focus for you, Randy. One night, I was on the air, and I got a call from a guy in Boca Raton, Florida, and he was really excited. Ron, you'll never believe where we're hearing you. We're in Florida tonight, and you're coming in loud and clear. And I said, sir, can you hold on a second? I've got another caller from Paris, France on line 3. That's a true story, and I did. So there was the signal of WoWo.
Now, there were a couple of things on your show that I think a lot of people remember. Bodie the janitor, I think, is probably number one. That was one of the most memorable things that people probably ask you about.
Yeah, I really hate it when the sidekick gets more popular than the star. I can't stand that.
How did that happen, that you happened to put him on the air? Because I know Sievers had said that he had put Bodie on the air at some point, I don't know when.
Yeah, although I had never heard that. Mm-hmm. In other words, when I got here, I did not know that Bodie had been on the air ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was infrequently. I mean, I had him on every night, but basically, the other guys would just grab him once in a while, and it never became like an ongoing routine until we started doing it. But the reason was that WoWo had 50 employees, but when I was there at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, it was just me and the janitor and maybe a news person. So I had to grab whatever I could, and he came walking through one night, and I said, "Well, what have I got to lose?" Edgar Bergen had Charlie McCarthy. I got to have something here. So I put him on, and Bodie had the same problem that James Earl Jones had when he was a kid, and the same problem Mel Tillis had, and that is he was a stutterer.
Mm-hmm.
And never to make fun of him, because I included him in everything we did, including appearances outside of the station, but he would get on, and it would take him 10 minutes to get through one sentence. And so the funny part of the bit was that I would ask him about things that even Albert Einstein would have trouble with. I would ask him to explain, for example, the concentric zone theory of developing a suburban community. Or, could you please explain how nuclear fission works? And he would, no matter what I would ask him, he would give us an explanation. Here's a man who was a janitor, but in his mind, he had the perfect reason why all those things would work.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go into these long dissertations, and of course, with the stuttering and everything, you couldn't help but be amused by it, because he sounded like an authority, even though nothing he said made any sense. People got to really enjoy him, and he became, one of the kind of the regular crew members. They even printed those publicity photos for him and everything.
Were you surprised at the level of popularity that Bodie had?
Yeah, I think I was, especially when they asked him to be the grand marshal of one of the parades here in the area, and another day invited him up to the North Webster Palace of Sports to give a ceremonial speech in front of 200 people. And he had him out there in 90-degree heat in lawn chairs, and these people were dying after about 20 minutes because he was just making things up as they popped into his mind, and he was talking about the universe and his station wagon and, you know, what it's like to run a waxing machine on the floor. It was unbelievable. You know, in the audience were people like Chris Schenkel and O.J. Simpson, who was there that year. And to think that they're sitting there listening to this guy who sweeps and cleans at night, but all of a sudden got his chance to be a star. And it was really, it's something I'll never forget.
Tell me about the real Rick Marr. I remember his Hollyweird reports. What was the story behind Rick?
Rick was a college friend of mine at the University of Maryland. We both worked at WMUC, which was the Maryland campus station. By the way, Connie Chung was my news girl. This was when I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So Rick always had this fascination for radio, and he worked with me at the college station. Then he moved to Los Angeles. And when I began working at WoWo, of course, we all knew what WoWo was, and having grown up on the East Coast, he said, would you like me to call in once in a while and bring you some news out here from Los Angeles? And I said, well, how in the world? You don't know anybody out there. You don't know Jack Nicholson or Al Pacino. How are you going to do any news from? So he started reading out of TV Guide, and it didn't matter what the story was. It could be about Farrah Fawcett or Lee Majors or Jackie Gleason. It didn't matter. He'd just start reading it. But we used sound effects. We had a little teletype machine. And you got to remember now, in those days, you didn't have Entertainment Tonight. And you didn't have The Insider. And you didn't have the Fox Variety News. There was basically no showbiz news at all on the media, on the broadcast media. So this was a big deal. He would come on like Hedda Hopper, like he knew every secret in Hollywood. And here he is working in land development, you know. But he had that delivery, as you probably remember.
I do.
He would say things like, is it true? And then he would start reading some outrageous story. And we did use a lot of sound effects. You know, if he didn't like somebody or somebody pulled a bonehead move, we'd shoot him. We'd have a gunshot or we'd have water splashing on somebody. It was unique is what it was. And he developed a real fan club. He got a lot of mail, a lot of mail.
Now, what years did that run?
It was basically in the mid to late 70s.
Yeah.
I think tapered off in the early 80s.
Yeah.
I think we did it for 4 or 5 years. And also, at one point, he had a sponsor. There was a place called Fort Wayne Electronics, and they actually bought the show, even though we were just making it up as we went. And they had him out there for a remote one time. They flew him out here to Fort Wayne from Hollywood, California, and he did a pajama sale. They had a sale that started at midnight. So he was hanging around in the store in his pajamas and his toupee and doing, you know, just signing autographs and stuff. I've never seen anything like it.
During the mid-70s, you were definitely getting a lot of attention. You were a nominee for Billboard Personality of the Year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't win. But there were a lot of good people in those days. You know, you had all those guys in New York and Philly. And I mean, the guys that influenced me, like Dan Ingram and Cousin Brucey and Dr. Don Rose and Charlie Tuna and Robert W. Morgan and Wolfman Jack and, you know, all the guys in Chicago, Barney Pipp and John Records Landecker and, oh my goodness, Larry Lujack. I mean, it just goes on and on. And these guys were all good. And, you know, and what I did was take a little from each one of them. You know, I just borrowed 2% here, 3% there, probably 30% from Dan Ingram, who was my all-time hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little help from Willard Scott, who turned out to be a real nice friend. When I was about 10 years old, a friend and I took a bus downtown in Washington to the NBC studios and snuck in there at 9 o'clock at night and got to hang around with Willard while he was doing his radio show. Now, this was WRC in Washington, an NBC O&O. Well, two 10-year-old kids have no business being in the NBC studios after 9 o'clock at night in a secure building. But we managed to worm our way in there one way or another, and he let us watch for hours. answered all my questions and really got me interested in radio. And you know, it's, I try to pass that on to kids today too, if they care. You know, I don't force it on them, but if they want to know or they want to watch a show or something, I don't have any problem with it.
One thing I was always amazed at, both with you and Chris Roberts, was how long the two of you guys stayed at WoWo, considering the level of talent that you had that could have translated to pretty much any market in the country.
Yeah, we both got offers. I remember when Mike Joseph came in here and tried to hire both of us, and he was the program director of WABC in New York. And there were others. And, you know, WoWo... And this is a great way. I'm glad you brought this up because I had even jotted this down. I wanted to mention it. WoWo had a way of making you want to stay because it was so much fun to be there. And the high level of personalities at WoWo was equivalent to that of a major market station. Specifically, Bob Chase, Bob Sievers, the intelligence of Jay Gould, the dedication of Sam DeVincent, the music librarian, who's now in the Smithsonian. I don't mean Sam. I mean his collection. Hi, Sam. Boy, you look like yourself. Just the overall talent, and thank you for including me and Chris. Here's the way I looked at it. All right, here's you can put this on my tombstone. WoWo was a family. The grandfather was Jay Gould. The father was Bob Sievers. Bob Chase, Jack Underwood, Sam DeVincent, these were the uncles. The kids were Ron Gregory and Chris Roberts. The cousins were people like Earl Finkel, Bodie the janitor, the real Rick Marr. And it was literally a family. And you had all the generations represented, and they each had their place in the pecking order. And it was a great place to grow up for me and Chris. I'm sure he would say the same thing.
How old were you when you started at WoWo?
24. And I'd already worked a few years on the East Coast. And then 4 years at college. So I had a lot of experience when I got there, but I was still very young.
Are there any contests or promotions that really stick out in your mind through those years?
You know, I always liked the kite fly, the WoWo kite fly, because we got hundreds of families out to one of the local recreational parks and got a chance to really have some fun in a family way. And then no other station did that. And when WoWo stopped doing it, it kind of broke my heart because I always thought that was great. Obviously, the penny pitch campaign, everybody's going to mention that. And you know, the ho-ho, wo-wo, where we would call public pay phones, and if they answered the phone, if somebody was walking by and they picked it up and they said, ho-ho, wo-wo, they want a ham for Christmas. That was very unique. I mean, how many radio stations can have a ho-ho, wo-wo?
Yeah, there were two contests that I recall that were so unique. One was ho-ho, wo-wo, and the other was the contest where they would play musical clips that said wo-wo.
Yeah, that's right, the wo-wo music contest.
And I think both of those contests were used more than once.
Sure. Yeah, that was actually called the WoWo Music Contest, and we had songs like the one with Tom Jones where he goes, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What's
whoa,
new,
whoa.
Pussycat? Yep.
And we'd string about the 25 of those together, just the WoWos, and the listener had to pick out each one, the record and the artist, send them in, and whoever got the closest to having them all right was the winner. And if there was a tie, they'd draw, you know. But it was that was, again, quite unique. And, boy, the hours we'd spend in the production studio getting ready for that one.
You know, that was one thing that even when I was at WoWo, people tended to just hang around because it was fun. Even when they were supposed to go home, they would still do work there and hang around in the studio just because it was such, for lack of a better term, a great place to be.
See, and you just answered your own question about why Chris and I were there so long. It was a lot of fun, and we were learning. We'd have these legal meetings once a year where they'd bring in a team of 10 or 20 lawyers and lecture us on FCC laws, you know, for a day. You don't see that anymore, and you didn't see it that much then, you know, except at a really good organization.
Any other memories of WoWo that really come to mind?
Only about 10,000. Which one would you like? No, it's endless. I mean, obviously, when you grow up somewhere, and I spent 24 years there, so... The best part was meeting all the different people that went through there, and there were hundreds when you look over a quarter of a century. Of course, Bob Sievers was there a half a century. It's a shame you can't talk to Bob now.
I have just been handed a note by someone else here at thehistoryofwoWo.com, and it says, ask him about the story when he got locked in the attic.
Well, that's close. Actually, what happened was we were on the fourth floor of the Gaskins building. And there were no windows up there on the studio side of the building. It was just brick, but there was a fire escape. And so the only way I could tell at night, because I didn't have an office in the front of the building, the only way I could tell what was happening, if it was raining or not, was to go out on that little fire escape in the alley and look. And the I didn't know this at the time, but I didn't think about it, but the fire escape door did not have a handle or a lock on the outside. So when it blew shut with me out there on the fire escape, and I got a three-minute record on the air being heard in 28 states, that was a problem. Thank God Bodie the janitor was in there working that night, and after about 6 or 7 minutes, he heard me knocking on the door. And I mean, knocking would be the understatement of the year. You know, I was literally trying to knock it down. I heard him turn off his floor waxing machine, and then all of a sudden he could hear me. And he comes up to the door without opening it, and he hears me knocking, and I'm just pounding and pounding away. And Bodie says, who is it? And I said, it's an airmail special delivery. Open the door. Meanwhile, the record's going cha-chunk, 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 you know, because there were needles in those days. Anyway, that was the story. It wasn't an attic, but it certainly was the fire escape. And by the way, I was the one that called it the world-famous Wo-Wo fire escape, and that became legendary.
I was just about to ask you that, if you were the person who can claim credit for that.
I am, but I have to admit, Jay Gould was already saying world-famous Little Red Barn. So I kind of, you know, borrowed that part of it from Jay to give him the credit for it. But as far as the fire escape, because I was the one that was there at night going out to look to see what the weather was, I started using it all the time. And to this day, they're using it, and I want to know where my royalty checks are.
And I don't believe there's a fire escape on the building. It's a first floor.
Now, Randy, you're giving away secrets now. You're not allowed to talk about stuff like there's no fire escape anymore. Are you trying? Next, you're going to tell me there's no Easter Bunny, and I'm going to hang up. But no, you're right. That's exactly correct. Actually, the fire escape wound up getting chopped up.
The original fire escape, but then there was also a second fire escape on the new building.
That's true. Calvin Richards actually took one of the long metal bars from that fire escape and had it cut into little one-inch pieces and had those pieces laminated in this hard plastic, and we used it as a promotional thing. I have one still to this day on my coffee table, and it actually says a piece of the world-famous Wo-Wo fire escape.
And by the time this is on the historyofwowo.com, we will have a photo of that somewhere in, I believe it's going to be in the page called The Rest. But Doug Fisher, former newsman at Wo-Wo, is sending us a photo of his chunk of the fire escape.
There you go. But, yeah, all of that stuff is true. I tell you, another one real quick, and I know we're out of time here, but another gentleman named Ken Moore. Ken did the all-night show, which meant he followed me. One night it was raining really hard, and the roof started leaking. We were actually in the studio getting little drips of water because we were on the top floor. And Ken said to me, boy, that's not good. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. They're just filling the pool. And by the way, did you get your Wo-Wo pool pass? And Ken looks at me and he says, what are you talking about? I said, well, when you work here, you get a pool pass. There's a pool up on the roof, a big swimming pool, and we all use it. It's great, but you can't use it without a pass. So the next day, he went in marching into the general manager's office demanding his pool pass. The guy said, what pool? What are you talking about? He said, well, up on the roof, the pool. You can imagine how that went. We did that stuff all the time, all the time.
Well, Ron, it's been a real pleasure. I can tell you, in all seriousness, I grew up listening to you as a young person in Bluffton, Indiana, was a huge fan, and it was one of the thrills of my career to have the opportunity to work with you.
Randy, you are always so much fun, and I knew if I ever needed something in a hurry, I could depend on you. You were one of those guys that was fun to hang around with, but then when you had to get serious, you could do that, and I admire that. You were always one of my favorite employees, no doubt about it.